Thank you. And I have nothing to disclose. For those of you who aren't familiar, San Luis Obispo is a small community on California's Central Coast. We're located about halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. Our total county has about 280,000 people, so we're a very small community. Most of us in this room have probably seen this slide before. It's a CDC slide, basically, which demonstrates the relationship between climate change and health. You know, health professionals understand this relationship, but one of our basic understandings going into this project was that the general public does not. And so we were trying to educate the community on climate change being a public health issue and do it with very little resources. Again, some, there's a lot of statements out there. This is from the 2015 Lancet Commission. And as far as CDPH, our partner, our state partner on this, communication of climate change as a public health issue has been a priority for them for quite a while. When CDPH was trying to decide who to work with on this pilot project, they came to us for a couple of reasons. First of all, in the state of California, all jurisdictions are mandated by state law to have climate action plans. Our county was one of the first two counties in the state that had a completed climate action plan. We also were known at the state level for working on some innovative projects. Several years ago, we passed a bi-local ordinance that we took through our Board of Supervisors, had a unanimous vote, directing county staff to buy local whenever possible. We're an agricultural community, and there was no reason not to buy local. We have a Healthy Communities group, which is a multidisciplinary group that looks at new planning projects through a health lens, and we write our results and send it to our planning commission. I personally have been doing sporadic talks to graduate students at our local university on why climate change is a public health issue. And then I think ultimately is because we said yes. If we would have said no, they would have gone to somebody else. We had very simple goals for our campaign to raise awareness about the connection between climate change and health, to improve the capacity of our public health department to educate the community, and really to promote specific actions that individuals could do. We educated our staff, our clients, and community organizations, and we joked about this idea of a shoestring budget, that really we were only operating on one shoestring because we had very little funding. We developed a group of advisors that was a very robust group, including our Air Pollution Control District, our Metropolitan Planning Organization, our planning departments, our community foundation, nonprofit organizations. And when we sat down and tried to talk about what the tone of our campaign should be, we wanted it to be very positive. As I said, our county is small. And the central part of our county has a university, and it tends to be very liberal and progressive, but the northern and southern parts of our county are rural and very conservative. And so we wanted to have a positive campaign that could reach across all demographics, and we wanted to give people something that they could do. If we talked to them about some of the more dire aspects of climate change, we were afraid people would disengage. So we wanted them to feel that they all had a role and they all could do something. So we wanted our campaign to be emotionally compelling, personal, and local. Our name of our campaign is Outside and Slow. We take health and climate change personally. There was a lot of discussion about outside and slow. People would come up to me and say, what does it mean? I don't get it. Public health, we are known for naming things like the tobacco control program, maternal, child, and adolescent health, the AIDS program. We're not very creative in our names. But the advantage of a name like that is that people know what you do. And so Outside In Slow is a little outside our comfort level, and so we added the tagline, "We take health and climate change personally," to give the community an understanding of what we were about. Planning, we did about 6 months worth of planning. We had a group, we gathered them together, we talked about the title and what we intended to do, we developed our materials, and then we kicked off our campaign at Heal Slow. Heal Slow is our healthy eating, active living, obesity prevention coalition, and they became our partner. All of our materials are on their website. And the idea, we really focused on the co-benefits. So our idea was simple. If a health educator is out in the community educating people on why riding their bike is good for their heart and will help them maintain their weight, why couldn't we throw in a message, and by the way, it's also good for your environment. And so we focused on co-benefits, and we integrated our materials into our obesity prevention coalition. We implemented the program from August through June. Actually, we're continuing to implement past our pilot project period. We made over 20 presentations to over 700 people in the community. From, you know, we worked with churches, the Health Commission, California Conservation Corps is a group I did a presentation to. These are young adults, 18 to 24. They come, a lot of them, from very low-income families. They came from urban areas. They grew up on urban heat islands. They lived in communities where there were plants spewing toxins in the air, and they really understood the climate change issue, and they were extremely engaged. We did outreach events. We went out to farmers markets. We went to our local university. We had over 1,500 PSAs air in both English and Spanish on our local radio stations. We hit every local radio, major local radio station, with three different topics. It's a small community, but we got seven prominent pieces in media. We had weekly posts on our social media sites. And then I'm going to talk to you in a little more depth about what we did in our WIC clinics, because it was probably the most innovative part. And then one of our partners, the Air Pollution Control District, was already doing a workshop in local elementary schools on asthma and air quality. We were able to change their curriculum, tweak their curriculum a little bit to add a climate change and health piece into their curriculum, so that we were also educating our elementary school students. Our local congresswoman, who's retiring this year, is a climate change advocate. She read one of the media pieces on what was going on, and Congresswoman Capps came to visit with us. She was extremely impressed. You know, we're all public health professionals. We all know public health has been devastated by our economic downturn in the past several years, and she was impressed with the idea that we were able to do this without any direct funding. One of the things we felt was important, our agricultural community tends to be conservative, and one of our retired county supervisors was on our advisory group, and he kept stressing we need to engage the agricultural community on this issue. So with CDPH's help, we were able to secure the agriculture secretary for our state, Secretary Karen Ross. And with one of our partners, we did a food resilience conference at our university, and Secretary Ross came and talked about health, climate change, and resilient food systems. And she's very well known in the agricultural community, and it was she was very well received. We got media coverage on that as well. Again, our most innovative project was in our WIC clinics, and as you all probably know, WIC serves low-income families. It's nutrition education and food vouchers to supplement low-income families' diets. And so we reached out to 1,100 WIC families, and we were able to integrate climate change education into WIC clinics. We did pre and post. They were not matched. We did not find statistical significance. So anecdotally, we were able to see that it looks like we made a difference. What we plan to do this coming spring is to do a more formal research on this topic. But we asked people pre and post, how likely are you to take action on climate change? And we did find a difference, even though it wasn't significant. So what we did in our WIC clinics, we had both individual and group classes, and we had about a 20-minute curriculum. And so we brought people in, and the first thing we did is we talked to them about the difference between weather and climate. Weather pattern, climate is the pattern, weather what's happening today. And then we talked about potential impacts in our county. You know, what are we experiencing? And we asked people if they were experiencing any of these things. And then we were able to tie health impacts into the climate impacts that people were seeing. And we had pretty robust discussions. Then we got to the piece on what can people do. And we, you know, many of our families already ride the bus, or they share cars because there's only one car per household. But we talked to them about the benefits of active transportation. We talked to them about reducing energy use in their homes. We talked to them about farmers markets. We developed a handout on local produce and talked to them about if you buy produce that's in season, it's going to be more affordable. Where can you find this produce? How do you identify produce that's in season? You know, what are the benefits of shopping in farmers markets? One of the things that struck our families the biggest was the idea between tap and bottled water. Many of our families come from countries where tap water is not safe, so they walk around with these bottled, you know, they purchase bottled water all the time. One of our WIC dietitians did a great job, developed this handout, and made an assumption if the average person drank 20 gallons of water per month, and you bought single bottles each time, it would cost you almost $2,000 a year. However, if you drank 20 gallons of water per month and you drank tap water, it would cost $2.78 per year. And our families were extremely impressed with this. And so we talked to them why drinking tap water is better for them, how much less expensive it is, and that you can save all these plastic bottles ending up in your landfill. So we made a lot of converts by doing this. Some of our lessons learned, our audiences were extremely receptive to our message. Again, I think some of this is self-selection. When we were out in the community doing talks, people who were not receptive probably didn't show up. But they were very receptive to our message, and even people within the public health field did not see a connection between climate change and health. We have two CDC public health associates that have been placed with us for about the past 5 years, and two of our associates asked to work on this campaign because they were extremely interested in it, and they went back to CDC in Atlanta in May and made a presentation on what we've been doing on climate change and health to their graduating class. And there were staff at CDC who had supervised them that came up to them after and said that they were very impressed with this, and they hadn't personally seen the connection between climate change and health. So, you know, we feel we've made a difference that way. We feel some of the strengths we're placing this program within our public health department, but more specifically within our health promotion division. There is a lot of work, you know, being done in public health departments within emergency preparedness programs. A lot of environmental health programs are doing work on climate change, but our goal was to integrate it into health education outreach. And it's a very cost-efficient way to get the health education climate change message out into the community. You don't need a lot of funding. All you need is administrative support that allows you to combine messages when you're out there. And so we felt we were very effective in reaching our shoestring budget goal. Some of the challenges we experienced were the idea of moving from education to engagement. For example, we had a list of things people could do, you know, shop at farmers markets, ride the bus, you know, use less energy use in your home, etc. But a lot of times people felt that that was too simple. You know, well, I already do that. I want to do something else. And so when you move to the advocacy piece and you tell them, well, you know, make sure your vote counts, you know, speak to, go speak in front of public bodies, et cetera, that seemed too difficult. And so there's an area in there, a gray area. They want to do something, but they don't want it to be too hard, and they don't want to feel it's too easy. And so that was a constant challenge. My message when I was out in the community is that every little thing every person does collectively makes a difference. And so I would keep stressing that the little things do count. And then, of course, we did have a need for additional resources. One of our goals was to get out to the business community, and we developed a bunch of decals to put in business windows saying that they supported this concept, but without dedicated staff, it was very difficult to do. So we've still got all of our decals, and that's one of the things we're going to be working on in the coming year. More information, all of the pieces we developed for our campaign are on our website. We have three different handouts that were developed by CDPH as well as a brochure. Within our WIC clinic, we developed several different pieces that we use for our WIC clients, but it's all available on our website. And that's it.
We have time for a couple of questions. Are there questions? Please. Yes. Just speak up, please.
Sorry. I think that it might be worthwhile directing some of your efforts at elementary school teachers.
Great idea.
Yeah. Another question or comment in the back? Yes, please.
You said it's an agriculture county, and I was wondering if there's any outreach to the producers, the farmers, in terms of the kind of farming they're doing.
Our three main commodities are wine grapes, strawberry, and cattle. And the wine industry, we're in the midst of an exceptional drought. The wine industry has made significant changes in how they're harvesting grapes and how they're growing grapes. So there are efforts going on, not so much from our department, but through the agricultural commissioner, and through some of our water basins are drying up. and so there are some regulatory things, but yes, they are making changes.
Thank you very much, Ms.